Wisdom, the final frontier to true knowledge. Welcome to Wisdom Trek, where our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, your captain on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Thank you for joining us today as we explore wisdom on our second millennium of podcast. This is day 1441 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is essential to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, you must have a proper understanding of God and His Word. This week on our Worldview Wednesday episodes, we will continue with our study based on a course that I recently completed, taught by Dr. Michael S. Heiser. Our study is titled, Sons and Daughters of God, The Believer's Identity, Calling, and Destiny. Throughout this multi-week course, we will demonstrate that, in the Old Testament, sons of God and holy ones refer to supernatural beings whose father is God and who work with God to carry out His will, and that His divine family was present before humanity. By fully engaging the biblical texts such as Psalm 82, Psalm 89, and Deuteronomy chapter 32 verses 8 and 9, our study will show that this divine family functions as a template for God's human family. God desires of human, as His imagers, to participate in this council. This study addresses issues such as polytheism, the nature of little g gods, and the uniqueness of Yahweh. Within this study, we'll apply insights to the New Testament text and shows how the metaphors for being God's family informs our sense of identity and mission as believers. This week, we'll start a section on Objections, Part 1, and we'll first look at segment number 5, the Trinity. And we want to see that the impossibility of Elohim as Trinity in Psalm chapter 82. Now, as we go through these questions, I think we'll see that none of them are really very complicated, although some are easier to see the answers than others. Let us take the question about the Trinity first. Are the plural Elohim referenced in Psalm 82, for instance, references to the Trinity, as some people think? Well, if we are talking about Psalm 82 and its council, which of course is drawn on by Psalm 89 and other passages that we'll see as we go on, Psalm 82 actually forbids the idea that it could be speaking of the Trinity. Let's take a look at the psalm itself and just read through it. Let's start with verse 1. God has taken His place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, He holds judgment. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Selah. Give justice to the weak and fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Rescue the weak and needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. They have neither knowledge nor understanding. They walk about in darkness, and all the foundations of the earth are shaken. I said, you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, like men you shall die, and fall like any prince. Arise, O God, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all the nations. That's the entire psalm, and what is its point? Well, the plural Elohim in verse 1 that God is addressing is His council and is really getting a reprimand from God because they are wicked and they are corrupt. What about this divine rebellion? We get a little bit of the sense of what is the point by the last line. Arise, O God, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all the nations. That would take a whole nother course to explain the divine rebellion in the history of the Old Testament and in Old Testament theology. Still, one of those rebellions has to do with what happened at the Tower of Babel. The short version is that God was again displeased with humanity and decided, I'm going to split you up into a bunch of different nations. And according to Deuteronomy chapter 32 verses 8 and 9, God assigned those nations and He divided them up according to the number of the sons of God. So God assigns the nations that are not His own people because He is going to call Abraham right after the Tower of Babel incident and create for Himself a new nation. He assigned those other nations to other gods. He allots them to them. And here in Psalm 82, we find out that those other gods did not rule the nations according to the good laws, the good rules, the good nature, and the good character of Yahweh. God still wants His people to be treated well, even though they are not Israelites. So God is giving these other gods, the sons of the Most High, in verse 6, a reprimand. They are corrupt, they are wicked, and they are evil. And the psalmist in the last verse looks forward to the day when God would rise up and take the nations back. In other words, breaking the stronghold of these other gods, solving the wickedness problem for all the other nations as well. And to summarize this section, that alone, that little set of facts about the Psalms and its context, of course, it rules out the Trinity. God is never going to reprimand the other members of the Trinity for being corrupt. He is never going to look at them with eyes, so to speak, and say, "Well, you are gods, you are Elohim, all of you. Nevertheless, you are going to die like men." He is never going to say that to the other members of the Trinity. The Spirit of God is not a son of God anyway, going back to the language of verse 6. So we don't have the Trinity here by any stretch of the imagination in Psalm 82. That would be, frankly, terrible theology. So the question about the Trinity is arguably the easiest of these questions to answer. But let's move on to the next segment and think about, is it talking about idols in these passages? Well, first, we want to look at that there are no idols in heaven. Now, we just saw that the plural Elohim in Psalm 82, verse 1, is not a reference to other members of the Trinity, because those other members of the Trinity aren't wicked and corrupt. But some of you would ask, well, are they idols? Are we talking about idols here? Because in the Old Testament, we do see a few passages where idol talk and talk about other gods are sort of mixed. Well, if we look forward in Psalm 89 and in Job chapter 1 and 2, we rule this out. In Psalm 89, God's counsel is in heaven. It is in the skies in that language. Now, we don't have idols in heaven. Idols are objects of the earth. In Job chapter 1 and 2, the sons of God appear in God's own presence, in his throne room, so to speak. And we don't have idols in God's throne room either. To be a bit blunter about this, idols don't work for God, and God doesn't use idols to accomplish his will. We are not talking about idols here. When we are talking about the divine counsel, these plural Elohim, these sons of God. Now, the other divine counsel seems will make a point very clear. Idols do not participate in God's program. Let's look at another passage. It talks about the heavenly host, which is 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 19 through 23. In 1 Kings 22, verses 19 through 23, we read about an episode in Israel's history where the Israelite king Ahab has invited the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat, to his palace because he wants to convince Jehoshaphat to align himself with his battle plans. Ahab wants to go out and attack a city called Ramoth-Gilead. Jehoshaphat goes up there to meet with Ahab. Ahab brings out all of his prophets, and they, of course, say, "Yeah, Ahab, you know what you're doing. Go up there. You are going to be successful." But Jehoshaphat has a little bit more sense than Ahab does, and he knows that they're just telling him what he wants to hear. So he asks, "Hey, isn't there a prophet of Yahweh around here somewhere that we could ask him?" And I love Ahab's answer in 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 8. He says, or it reads, "And the king of Israel, Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, 'There is yet one man whom I may inquire of the Lord, Micaiah, the son of Imlah, but I hate him. He never prophesies any good concerning me, but just evil.'" In other words, he never tells him what he just wants to hear. So they bring Micaiah out, and Micaiah first mocks Ahab's prophets by repeating what they say. But Ahab is not a dumb guy. He knows what's going on. And he says in verse 16, "How many times shall I make you swear that you speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord?" And so Micaiah says, "All right, do you want to hear what the Lord really has to say? I'll tell you." And in verse 19 on, we read this. Micaiah said, "Therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing beside him, on his right hand and on his left. And he said, 'Who will entice Ahab, that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead?' And one said one thing, and another said another. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, 'I will entice him.' And the Lord said to him, 'By what means?' And he said, 'I will go out, and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all the prophets.' And he said, 'You are to entice him, and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Now therefore, behold, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these prophets, and the Lord has declared disaster for you.'" Now, this is a real telling scene in a number of respects. And we will get to some of those respects as we continue through this course over the subsequent weeks. What I want you to notice here is that who is with the Lord in this meeting about Ahab? It is members of the heavenly hosts. They are spirits. They are not idols. And again, idols do not work for God. We're going to see this kind of situation in other passages as well. So the question is, who carries out God's decrees? Now what I want you to be thinking about is, who participates with God in carrying out God's will? Who is there for God to task for carrying out His decrees? We've ruled out the Trinity because in Psalm 82, the members of the Trinity are not wicked. It is not idols either, because idols don't work for God. They are hostile to God, and they are, by definition, opposers. And 1 Kings chapter 22 gives us a first glimpse of that. In our next Worldview Wednesday, we will take a look at some other passages that support this truth. That will conclude our next two segments in our study, Sons and Daughters of God, the Believer's Identity, Calling, and Destiny. Join us again next week. I believe that you'll find each Worldview Wednesday contains thought-provoking topics to consider as we build our biblical worldview. Tomorrow we will continue with our 3-minute humor nugget that will provide you with a bit of cheer, which will help you to lighten up and live a rich and satisfying life. So encourage your friends and family to join us and to come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, Creating a Legacy. If you'd like to listen to in the past 1,440 treks or read the Wisdom Journal, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day's trek will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor. But most importantly, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly, love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, and leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward, enjoy your journey, and create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.